Monster Man, Episode 392, Elementals Revisited, Part 4.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're continuing our journey through the Elemental section of Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. Before we get started, though, a quick reminder, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out, Tuesday the 2nd of November, or I guess late on Monday the 1st of November, then tonight is the online launch for the book that I recently co-authored, Line Rampant, A Viking in the Sun. I'm going to be giving a short talk, and there will also be presentations by my co-authors, Gianluca Roccagni and Dan Mercy. There'll be a link to that in the show notes if you want to turn up. All right, so today we're going to finish out the Elemental Kin. These are those creatures that are sort of elementals, but they're also other things. Those places where, I mean, like, is a genie an elemental? Is it a spirit? Is a Ruzalka an elemental? Is it a ghost? Right? We've run into a number of cases where there have been these sort of categorically ambiguous monsters, and here we're going to run into a few more. Although these are all, the first ones anyway, the Firekin, are pretty clearly elemental. We start with the Salamander. I don't have much to say about the Salamander, which is the first Firekin, because they're very similar to their entry in the first Monster Manual. They're cruel, evil, fiery, sneak people. They get a little more elaboration in terms of their tactics and habitat, but there's nothing in those tactics or in that habitat, like they live in volcanoes and fiery places. And, you know, one of their tactics is they wrap people in their coils and then they throw them in the fiery bits. Why you would be in a salamander's, you know, 500 degree Fahrenheit lair without having some kind of fire protection on you in the first place, I don't know, but never mind. So there's nothing in those elaborations that you wouldn't kind of extrapolate from what we already know, but it's nice to have them, I suppose. And in some cases, we get clarifications on what the original entry means. So for example, the original entry says that salamanders can't be harmed except by magic weapons, by magical creatures, or by creatures that are very strong. And in this one, you know, that gets a number put to it. Similarly, we have the Fire Snake, a little monster that doesn't get much detail. Didn't get much detail in its original incarnation, and all I have to point out is that the Fire Snake is different from the Fyrsnaka, which is Old English for Fire Snake, and is a monster from the Creature Catalog. And you would be very disappointed, you know, depending on the context, if you wanted one, but you got the other. Now, the creature that I want to talk about most in this episode comes from the Waterkin section, and that is the Nereid. Now, we've covered Nereids twice. First, when they first appeared in Monster Manual 2. Actually, I'm not sure about the order, but once when they first appeared in Monster Manual 2, and once when they had their own special episode. Although those may have been naiads, or they may have been nymphs, but I mean, it's all pretty much the same thing. There are a few differences in this entry from the entry in Monster Manual 2, although some of the text is almost directly copied over, including the emphasis on the Nereid's magical shawl. So, the Nereid's loveliness and her kind of powers of suggestion are emphasized here, I guess, a little bit like the Dryad, who we saw not that many episodes ago. And, of course, they're couched in very gendered terms. So the Nereid has powers that can kind of, like, manipulate the male gaze, I guess. If they meet an all-female group, in order to entice them, they'll try to appear in a male form. But this is almost impossible for it to succeed. So any woman has a 65% chance of seeing through the Nereid's male illusion, because Nereids just aren't very good at imitating men. But what that means is that in a four-person adventuring party, there is a less than 2% chance that this ruse will work. No group of adventurers, when one of them makes a roll and says, oh, that's not a handsome man, it's actually a beautiful woman with a magic shawl, no one's going to be like, well, I guess Gunhilda's hallucinating again. They're going to go, ah, looks like the player passed her saving throw. If there are five women, the chance drops to less than 1%. This is a power which basically cannot work. So it's weird that they would even bother trying to use it in the first place. Because if a group of adventurers catch you popping out of a pool of water trying to look like Fantasy Paul Rudd or whatever, they're not going to trust you very much after that. Whereas they think that they would be more trusting if you appeared in your natural form and just appealed directly to them, right? Anyway, my point is that, you know, this is TSR in the 90s. This is TSR at its most kind of censorious. I remember when I was at university, there was a lot of debate about the policy that TSR had at the time of not presenting anything other than heterosexual relationships in their published work, right? And I'm not talking about, like, adult content. You know, heaven forfend there was any discussion of sexuality, but you never encountered, like, a couple who were dating other than it was a man and a woman. I mean, it was the 90s, you know, but we can see here that this is very grounded in certain kind of stereotypes. So the Nereid's powers are supposedly based on its beauty and its attractiveness, right? And it presumes that all men and no women are attracted to women, which I do not believe to be the case. The other thing that's a little odd about this is that it does seem to think that stealing the shawl and thus effectively enslaving the Nereid is the play, which I don't know. Well, I guess a Nereid who lost her shawl couldn't ask you for help, but maybe her sisters could. That would be a fun motivation, right? And it's a, you know, then there's a moral test for the characters, right? Well, now we have this thing which allows us to command this powerful magical creature. Do we give it back to her or do we hold on to it? And it's not like the characters are going to get punished by the sisters, because if the sisters could get it back for themselves, they would have done it. The final thing that stands out to me about the Nereid entry is that they have, quote, no goals or ambitions other than cavorting in water, close quotes. So they just kind of like synchronize swim all day, and that's just what they're into. They're, you know, they're creatures of pure wateriness, and they just splash around. And they hang out with giant otters, which is pretty cool. Like, they have animals that they use to defend their sort of grottos and whatever, and one of the things you can roll is a giant otter, which is pretty cute. I feel like if your players would just straight up kill a giant otter and then be a lady and take her shawl, you might want to have a word with them. Finally, we have the Water Weird. We've talked about the Water Weird before. We've talked about how much I like the Water Weird. This one's not all that different. The only way in which this is an improvement on the existing Water Weird is, of course, that because it is an elemental, it has a great Tony DiTerlizzi illustration. It's a bit weird, though, because the Water Weird has a great sense of motion, but because it's next to the Nereid, who is in kind of a static pose, it looks a little bit odd. Like, it's rapidly coiling toward the right side of the frame, you know, like a striking snake. But then she's just kind of sitting and chilling. So that looks a bit weird. I guess her shawl, which is here depicted with kind of a long white fringe, is blowing in the breeze, I guess, a little bit. I don't know, or floating in the water, maybe. But I mean, it's great. It's Tony DiTerlizzi. You know, you didn't need me to tell you that he's a really good artist. So nothing particularly new in the elemental kin. Interesting to see how the expansions are happening. So both the Nereid and the Salamander are expanded in ways that don't really conflict with their original entries in the books that they came from. Monster Manual for the Salamander, Monster Manual 2 for the Nereid. But they're elaborated, you know, they're made more concrete. So we can see, this is a criticism that people had of AD&D when it came out, that it was attempting to nail down the flexibility of the D&D system to create an inviolable set of rules. And whether that's true or not, I think we can see that rigidity progressing a bit more as we get into Monstrous Manual. This is definitely a book that's trying to... This is definitely a book that's trying to dot every I and cross every T. And, you know, sometimes that prompts creativity, and sometimes I feel like that's kind of to its detriment. For the elementals, have mostly been okay so far. And it's important, of course, to remember that this is intended as a book for people who have not read 4 previous monster books in a row. All right, that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. This week, we got some exciting special episodes for you. And of course, if you are a Patreon subscriber, you're going to be getting my end of month bonus content as well. If you're interested in learning more about Lion Rampant, A Viking in the Sun, please drop by our online launch on Tuesday evening. Link is down in the show notes. That's Tuesday evening. Hopefully I'll see some of you there and the rest of you next time on Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.